I have a question for David.
Okay, David, about tariff-fishing relation and 0 point. Do we have a tariff-fishing relation? And my question specifically, do we have the same problem as the Steinmetz has? Looks like your gap is judging from the velocity function way to price, which means that you're on the other side of the 0 point tariff-fishing relation as regarded with Steinmetz results. So is it a contradiction with him or not?
So I think the answer is we have the opposite problem. But Neil, do you want to address this? I think you can answer it better than I can.
Doing a very rough calculation, we're on the opposite side. But of course, you have to be very careful how you're measuring surge velocity, how you're measuring the feather stress, which is a little premature to say. We haven't done all the very detailed things. Doing just a very coarse analysis, we are on the other side of the problem.
So specifically, yeah, if we measure the circular velocities just in terms of a kind of GM over R around the objects, then we need a high mass to light ratio, both to match Tully Fisher and to match the luminosity. So the real question is, you know, can we reliably say what the circular velocities are in the range that they will be observed? Well, the luminosity density all depends on what you assume for N star over N.
Is this related to this?
If we measure our velocities at the quarter of the very radius, then we don't have a problem with the time.
Okay, so that could very easily be the difference.
Yeah. But we have a problem if we do, so we're obviously a little further than the other
direction. I had a question about the power spectrum that you showed, which had remarkably small error bars. Do you now have enough data at different redshifts that you can verify the linear theory growth factor directly?
So one comment is, I won't find the plot, but the there was a sort of coherent overall normalization error bar in that as well, of which actually a dominant thing is the uncertainty, just the mean flux decrement. However, part of what we are trying to do with this sample is to in fact see whether, you know, over the redshift range, sort of 3.2 to 2.3, which is about over which we have good data, whether we can say we are getting, you know, the right power spectrum evolution or not. And I don't yet know the answer to that question. But clearly that's one of the best tests for whether whether other kinds of things like temperature fluctuations or photoionizing background fluctuations are important. Ultimately, you would hope to test that by seeing that the fluctuations are growing at the level predicted by gravitational instability.
It's impressive that you're able to match the both the numbers and the luminosity function of the Steidel et al. Observations at redshift 3. A crucial test to see whether it's really corresponding to the observations is to look and see what the nature of these objects is. Of course, we don't yet know that much, but it should be possible over the next few years to disentangle where they are and what their properties are by looking, for example, at the cross-correlation between the damp Lyman alpha systems and the Lyman break galaxies, and also by measuring various things like the spectra, the SPDs across a wide range see how many old stars there are in the regions where there are these bright young stars, how massive they are, also line widths and things like that. I know that you're just starting to analyze these high-res simulations, and also the problem is that your smallest box, which has your highest resolution, also is it's a very representative part of the universe. It's not the high-density regions that presumably are where most of the LBGs are. This is going to be more true even at the higher redshifts. But I wanted to know if you started into this. One of the things that you can do is to look at
the
cross correlation.
So far is the clustering of the objects where we find what people find by other methods, that they're highly biased objects, they have about the right clustering. Clearly, cross correlations between these and the Lyman alpha forest, between these and the damp Lyman alpha systems, are things we're in a position to do, but we have not done.
If massive galaxies, I mean present day galaxies, were discovered at redshift 10, would that falsify the standard paradigm?
If things that were as massive as massive galaxies today, I think the answer is clearly yes.
Just a question on the scaling laws. Rob's laws are basically formed by looking at present-day galaxies where the dust and metals and the gas is presumably fairly high. Would you expect those laws to decrease, or, you know, the amount of star formation decrease at earlier epochs when you don't have as much dust and metals, and maybe solve your problem with excessive star formation?
Well, so this brings up what I think is an important point both for the numerical simulations and for the semi-analytic models, that we tend to specify what our star formation models are in terms of, you know, we have this parameter and this many dynamical times and this dependence on density, right? And really what matters is what the effect is. And so in our simulations, basically the effect of the star formation algorithm is that gas, as it cools and settles into the galaxies, it gets converted into stars without a long delay once it gets to sufficiently high density. And although energy is returned thermally to the surrounding medium, that doesn't actually have a great effect on the subsequent gas cooling. And so, you know, and we can change the specific parameters, but we always get basically that result. And we get pretty much the same population of galaxies if we did no star formation at all and just counted them by their final gas mass at the end. So that's basically what our star formation algorithm is. It's turn the gas into stars without a lot of delay. And in different models, that is changed in various ways, by allowing the gas to build up or by returning a lot of it with feedback. And certainly those kinds of those are possible things that could happen. And if they did, then that would change the answer. But I think it's not sensitive to the details of the star formation, but to that question of whether the gas gets converted into stars at the rate that it cools.
There is an observational point that the observed Lyman break galaxies actually do lie close to Kennicott's laws if it's true that their gas fractions are large, so comparable to the stellar masses. So if you assume gas fractions comparable to the stars, you infer, say, from the Nicmaus observations in these objects, and then the surface density star formation rate law is very close to Kennicott, to his low redshift laws.
Yeah, I have a question maybe for Michael. How much scattering and metallicity from place to place do the observations permit?
I think it's about a decade, a factor of 10 at redshift 3 in these low condensing carbon 4 systems. And that's what we find if you run simulations, actually, and you find that the scatter is not true of just the density field, the fluctuating ionization conditions. It's really a metallicity scatter. Can I just make one remark to the previous questions that was brought up about whether the metal input actually disturbs the conclusions of the simulations? I think the regions where you see the metals have an over-density of about 30 or so, or even higher if you look for Dalton and other systems. And then the combination time scales are short enough that you can actually cool down back to the pressure equilibrium and gravitational equilibrium at the point where the gas is. So you blow the gas out, it may settle back onto this filament, and at the time you blow it out, you destroy the equation of state and renormalize it and make it isothermal or whatever. But it begins to settle back to the equation of state that corresponds to the ambient medium, I think. And then you have wiped out the information of the original star formation. This gas is still metal enriched, but it has relaxed to the physical state of the surrounding gas. And that may be the reason why it works. You may still be seeing a trace of this enrichment effect in that most of the simulations don't agree on the Doppler parameter of the lines. So there may be some thermal residual that it's not just due to different resolutions and different large-scale power, whatever. It may be due to the memory of the metal enriched gas of the original enrichment process.
What is their combination time?
Comparable to
Hubble time?
No, it's comparable to Hubble time for mean density. So at 30, it's much shorter.
High
density. Yeah,
high
resolution.
But the low-condensity line, low-density region, and then recombination time,
Could you tell us a little bit about the sort of observations which you might want to see in the future, or another way of asking the same question, predictions from the simulations that go beyond the impressive results of fitting existing data?
Galaxy formation or Lyman Alpha Forest, either one. I think in terms of Lyman Alpha Forest, probably a lot can actually be done with spectra that already exist. But looking for one thing that would be interesting to look for would be various groups have developed techniques for trying to estimate the typical IgM temperature from the widths of lines measured, characterized in some way. And it would be interesting to see whether those things do appear to actually follow this tight correlation, or whether, in fact, there are substantial spatially coherent variations. And possibly that can also be addressed by looking at the temperatures implied by metal lines.
Yes, I'm looking at the bigger question of testing the paradigm. I mean, we want to believe it's true, but maybe there's something wrong. So, for instance, Jerry has this prediction that most baryons are in the hot gas, and that has a lot of important implications. Are there other similar things that we should be taking from the simulations and take more seriously?
I do think another promising direction is the one that Kurt Edelberger was mentioning yesterday, of trying to actually look at the cross correlations between galaxies in Lyman Alpha Forest, has been done at low redshift, but pushing that to high redshift. We haven't actually gone out and made those predictions yet, but clearly there are a lot of predictions that makes that tie in both the galaxy properties and the assumptions about the intergalactic medium, and one can start looking for those kinds of signatures.
That was a question, because our simulation is dangerous, but it's a different code. And one prediction would be the era of, you can't see the era of reionization of hydrogen too far back. But these make predictions for reionization of helium too, which is late enough so that it's within the domain in which you can observe it. And that is model dependent. You take very low omega or defect models that happen very far back. If you were to take standard KDM or neutrino models, et cetera, it happened very recently, if at all. So that's a very specific paradigm dependent event that the reionization.
I'm thinking that data is already dead, right?
I have a question for David as to, it's a fairly general question, how we should interpret these simulations. Because, I mean, we know that one of the limitations of cosmological simulations is the fact that they're limited by resolution effects. Now, it turns out that largely by good luck, when you look at the Lyman Alpha Forest, those resolution effects do not seem to be particularly important, although there's work by Tom Tons, George Stathy, and collaborators who argue that at least at the level of detail, one has to worry about resolution effects. Mm-hmm. But that seems to me is a coincidence, though, that you can get, in a broad brush sense, the Lyman Alpha Forest without having to worry about these kind of issues. But on the simulation of galaxy formation, it seems to me there the question of resolution is much more critical. And the hand-waving sort of process that's introduced often, turning the semi-analytics, is this question of the feedback, for example, which is a way to try and eliminate or minimize the effects of feedback. Now, your simulations of galaxy formation, as far as I could gather from reading between the lines of what you were saying, they only have sort of symbolic feedback, that feedback doesn't do much. Now, so what sort of effects, I mean, could that be part of the reason for why you seem to have this paradox that you can understand results at high redshift and not at low redshift? Is that playing a role in some sense, the lack of feedback?
Well, absolutely, it could be playing a role, and I think the big, the interesting question is whether that is in fact what's doing it or whether it's something else. I would say, naively, I would think it would sort of go in the wrong direction in the sense that, you know, we're kind of matching things at high redshift. And, I mean, there are big numerical uncertainties, there are big observational uncertainties. So at the factor of two levels, certainly things can slop around. But basically things seem to be working okay there. And the problem is, by the time we get to redshift zero, it looks like we formed too many stars. And I would, if we think of feedback as being more important in low-mass systems, then I would think it's relatively easier to suppress the high redshift galaxy formation relative to what happens at low redshift.
Okay, I think at this point we're going to take a break. We'll be back at 10:50 sharp with the Bank of One.